It's August 10th, 2010, and you are listening to FTRRadio.com. Leading off tonight's powerhouse lineup is Gillespie. At 8 o'clock Eastern is the Aaron Proctor Show, followed at 9 o'clock Eastern by Duke Over America, and the Smart Girl Report coming up at 10 o'clock tonight, and at 11 o'clock is the Armchair Energist. But first and foremost, our host with the most, Josh Gillespie.
Thank you, Mike. Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode of Gillespie here on FTRRadio.com. With me, as always, is my core crew of Christy Kelly, Mark Warner, and Mike Dzerski. You can find Mark and Mike over at HoosierAccess.com. You can find Christy at HoosierAccess, as well as ChristyKelly.com. Make sure to check her out. Tonight, we have pretty much a jam-packed episode. We're going to be talking about Proposition 8, and we're going to be covering that topic with two people on either side of that issue, with Bill Browning of the Bellerico Project and Dr. Melissa Clothier of MelissaClothier.com. But first, it's time to get to the monologue, then we can get to this jam-packed show. Does anyone listening right now know anyone that they would describe as being stubborn? Mark, put your finger down. You know, like your mother-in-law or one of your kids, your spouse, not mine, of course, or ex-spouse, someone who is simply determined to do whatever it is that they want to do regardless. Stop it. Put your finger down, Mark, regardless of the circumstance or whether it's even a good idea. Mark, you feel you point at me like you feel like you know someone who is. I don't know. Believe it or not, every single person listening right now does know someone like that, and it just happens to be the very same person. No, not me, as Mark seems to insist, but our president, Barack Hussein Obama. If you're paying attention at all during the 2008 presidential campaign, I'm willing to bet that you picked up on a few interesting tidbits regarding then-Senator Obama. No, I'm not talking about the creepy side-to-side head motion that he did, and still does, every time he's reading a speech off of his teleprompter. And by the way, how cool is it that for the first time in American history, a piece of equipment has risen to such prominence that it's given its own nickname, in this case, TOTUS, which of course stands for Teleprompter of the United States? What I'm referring to was then-Senator Obama's demonstrated coolness under fire, his seeming ability to take things in stride, his brilliance at reading someone else's words right off of a teleprompter. These things seem to make many feel that Mr. Obama was a man of reason, an intellectual who deeply understood the moods of the nation and would be willing to seek a common ground on our most divisive issues of the day, even though his brief period in the U.S. Senate was marked by bitter partisanship and rancor. In the roughly 19 months since he took office, President Obama has proven to be less like candidate Obama and more like Senator Obama, and one could argue like the Illinois State Senator who consistently voted in support of infanticide. And the way he's widened the partisan divide in such a manner that he almost makes President Bush look like the Nobel Peace Prize winner. Yeah, Nobel Prize. Remember that? Since taking office, the president has treated the desires and the will of the American people with the disdain Lindsay Lohan reserves for judges or alcohol treatment centers. President Obama has rammed through some very controversial legislation regarding health care. He's actually suing the state of Arizona in order to not have to enforce federal immigration law, and has placed two individuals on the Supreme Court completely out of touch with every American not living on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. This past week, things got even worse with the ruling on California's Prop 8, a ballot initiative regarding the banning of gay marriage. This is an initiative that passed in one of the bluest states in the nation by a 5% margin, despite record spending by opponents. This is an initiative that, if you believe its opponents, is responsible for everything from the killing of Matthew Shepard to the canceling of the TV show Lost, and everything in between. Chicken Little herself would be proud. Don't you think that it's reasonable to assume that in a state so liberal that Vermonters are jealous, the fact that this measure passed by over 600,000 votes is a rather telling and profound statement? And that's before we take into account the fact that every single state in the nation which has put such a law on the ballot has seen it pass. Every single state, red or blue. But Barack Obama is here to save the day. Yes, I know that he's a Democrat and that the entire theme of the Democratic Party is basically, we know better than you. But Barack Obama has taken this insanity to an entirely new level. His condescending lectures on how we should live make Bill Clinton's famous Lewinsky finger-wagging speech appear absolutely warm and welcoming. My friends, the issue here isn't necessarily whether gay marriage is the ruin of our society or simply none of your business. It isn't even a left or right issue, especially if you know anything about the judge who ruled on this case. The issue here is At what point will President Obama turn the teleprompter off and join the rest of society? When will he stop forcing his elitist Hyde Park values, upon a nation which doesn't see The View as a place to discuss serious issues and who can't fly his wife and 60 of her closest friends off to Spain on a whim? Mr. President, the American people have spoken time and time again. They have repeatedly told you that they don't believe that anyone should be forced to purchase substantial health care insurance. They believe that one should be more than just a wise Latina to be on the Supreme Court. They believe that the federal government should actually secure its borders, just like it says in the U.S. Constitution. And they have repeatedly told you that they believe marriage should be between a man and a woman. At what point will someone put in your teleprompter what your values are not, that your values are not our values? Perhaps in 2012. So, guys, we have a president here who has consistently, throughout his 19 months as president, completely disregarded the will of the people.
Who? The great divider in chief?
I think
not only has he disregarded the will of the people, he's pretty much taken the Constitution and wiped his you-know-what with it.
Well, I mean, you know, he health care insurance. Yes, we can all agree that there needed to be health care reform. Republicans and Democrats can agree on this issue. But forcing states to mandate, I mean, forcing individuals, not just states, but individuals to purchase health care. I mean, we saw
that has nothing, but that will do nothing for cost controls.
Well, we saw a week ago that the state of Missouri had a vote on whether they believed that they should be forced to buy health care insurance.
And
they
overwhelming.
And what was Washington's response?
Oh, it's just symbolic. It really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it really doesn't mean anything. Exactly. Yeah,
well, I think I could –
just like the
Washington's response could be say, mm-hmm. F you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and Chrissy, like you were saying, just like the judge ruling on Prop 8, he completely disregarded the will of the people. Now, this is the second time in California that the will of the people has been completely disregarded. And again, this is easily the bluest state in the nation. We have people in California who look at the Midwest, who look at the rest of the country, and well, they think this way over on the East Coast too, but the rest of us are just flyover country. You know, we're in the way. Our values mean nothing. And the will of the people is consistently put aside for this value of we know better than you. And you can't think very far on this. So, you know, or you're not even as enlightened as much as we are. So we're going to take you out of the way of yourself. Because
we need to save you from yourself.
Exactly.
They know so much better than us.
Exactly, because as they say, we are the ones you've been waiting for.
Yes, they can parent better than us. They mm-hmm. can educate better than us. They can feed us apparently better than what we can feed ourselves.
They can apparently take care of us better than we can, you know, especially in healthcare, you know. And again, I saw an article linked on Drudge last week of a pregnant woman who was giving birth in Canada in the waiting room. She was in contractions, and because she didn't get the care and the attention that she needed, the child was miscarried. The child died.
Stillborn.
Ouch.
And this is what we aspire to in our country in terms of healthcare. This is what our government thinks that they can provide.
Well, see, in Barack Hussein Obama's view, though, that woman should not have had that child. She should have had a government-sponsored abortion.
Well, clearly she was beyond that situation. But then again,
oh, there's no turning back, according to Hussein.
Oh, that's true. I mean, he ruled that way in the Illinois State Senate, and, you know, he was against the partial birth abortion ban. As a senator. And so, again, you know, we just there is this growing sentiment among, it seems, the Democrat Party with our president. And you know, to a certain extent, this does extend to Republicans, because for people who have been there for so long, consider Senator Lugar. We discussed him at length last week.
Oh, yes.
We have people out there who think that they know better than us.
It's the Potomac water.
You know, people do call it like to claim the Potomac fever. It's, I don't know what it is out there. I'll be honest.
Wassa.
I worked out there for a couple of years, and I enjoyed my time. And I was happy to leave when I did, in all honesty. But every time I go back to visit, because my in-laws live out there, and no, they are not the stubborn people that I was referring to in my monologue.
What time does your wife get home?
they're wonderful people. Thank you very much. I love my in-laws. There's this sense, I call it the siren song of Washington, that you go out there and it seems to suck you back in, because you're out there and you're like, wow, just look at it. It's the energy of the place. It radiates. And I can understand how the concept of Potomac fever. I really can. But, you know, there are people out there who are clearly trying to make a difference, who are trying to not get sucked into stuff like that. You know, I think of Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. I think of our own Mike Pence here in Indiana. I think of our own Congressman Burton, who is my representative and who is actually the representative of everybody sitting here at this table. You know, there are those precious few out there who believe that they don't know better than us, that they need to talk to us, that they need our input to make decisions.
I think this would be a good time to talk about Dan Burton's website. It's not his specific website, but the website that the Republicans have put together to listen more to what...
America Speaking Out. Absolutely, yeah. Everybody should go check out AmericaSpeakingOut.com. And, you know, if the Republicans, they are working to listen. And the thing is that listening is key. And... We want our leaders listening to us and not having to go to judges to make our decisions for us. We make our decisions, and then judges come in.
But the decisions we make, they don't like. Therefore, they go to judges.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's something that we're going to discuss here in the next segment with our guest, Melissa Clothier and Bill Browning. We're going to be discussing Prop 8 next and the role of Judge Vaughn Walker in that. Anyway, we will be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Hey, fellow conservatives, when you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Moco Choco whatever in the wacko latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. At HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
And welcome back to Gillespie. It is my pleasure to introduce to you our two guests this evening. We're going to have basically what I presume to be a very dynamic discussion on the ruling on Prop 8 out in California. We have with us Bill Browning of Balearico Project and Dr. Melissa Clothier from melissaclothier.com, as well as if you follow her on Twitter, she is Melissa Tweets. And Bill, real quick, before, if you guys could just give us a quick description of your guys' websites so that we know where people are kind of coming from on this issue. Bill, I'll let you go first.
Sure. Balearico Project is one of the nation's largest LGBT blogs. We have 100 different contributors that cover just about every aspect of any sort of gay life, trans life. We're not just political, but we're also listed in Technorati as one of the nation's top 100 political blogs.
Dr. Clothier?
I run a couple of sites, libertypundits.com, which has all the conservative podcasts all in one place, and then libertypundits.net, which both of those are a startup. We just started in April. Before that, I've been at melissaclothier.com, which is my own personal site, and I've written around the web freelance as well. So,
and you're also part of FDR. Let's remember that.
So, that's exactly right.
We wanted you guys on this show. We've discussed the issue of gay marriage on one of our previous episodes after the ruling in Wisconsin on the Defense of Marriage Act. And we found that we have basically we come at this issue from very differing opinions. And we kind of, even though there are only four of us, we kind of sort of run the gamut. And anyway, I just wanted to talk to you guys, first of all, about the ruling. Get each of your perspectives and see where we go from there. First of all, I'll start with you, Bill. I know you've probably been pretty busy since the ruling on Prop 8. What was that day like for you, and what has been the response since?
Well, we knew that it was coming because it was announced the day before. So we were able to actually set up the ed team to know that it was coming. But as soon as the ruling came out, it of course just went nuts for traffic and for news, with everyone desperate to be able to hear anything that anyone had on it. So we quickly put up a copy of the ruling, and, you know, Dr. Jillian Weiss from our editorial team put up, she's an attorney, so she put up a quick basic reasoning that was used in the case. But it's been amazing watching the people as they've written in, as they've left comments or they've put up their own posts about finally feeling validated. You know, there's one contributor that sent me a private email that had gotten married while it was still legal before Prop 8. That said, and the only thing it said was, thank God, well, maybe now I'll know the status of my relationship in the eyes of the government. That's just so heartrending to think that, you know, I mean, could you imagine, is the government going to recognize my marriage this week? Maybe I should put it up for a vote. That's got to be just an incredibly emotional turmoil.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Dr. Clothier, I always want to call you Dr. Melissa Clothier. Dr. Clothier, the reaction on the right has been, I want to say, from obviously from the older generation, there's been a little bit of outrage. I know that actually the response actually to the judge hasn't Bill, maybe you can correct, either probably both of you can probably correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it doesn't seem like there's been an outright dismissal of Prop 8, because I believe the judge put a stay on it. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
So it still actually exists.
Yeah, well, no, he has ruled that it's illegal and it doesn't exist, but he did put a stay on it. Mm. And the stay, they had until Friday for both sides to, you know, send in their paperwork on why they think this is a good thing or it's not. And there's no idea yet when he's actually going to rule on the stay.
Okay.
However, even if he does actually lift it, it can automatically be appealed straight up the line for an emergency stay there.
Sure.
So it's a little doubtful, but several of the cities in California have said that they're just waiting for the stay to actually be lifted, because it would give them at least a few hours in between, you know, when he lifts his and the next court up decides to stay it, and they could actually start marrying couples at that time. And I think it's worthwhile to say that, you know, the attorney general and the governor, that's Republican and Democrat, you know, Brown and Schwarzenegger, both filed with the judge to say that they thought he should automatically lift the stay and allow same-sex marriages to continue in California uninterrupted.
Well, it seems like at least on the right, obviously there's been kind of a mix of outrage and sort of a question of that outrage, because the demographics in our country are so that, you know, it seems that younger people who are involved in politics tend to be a little bit more accepting of the gay lifestyle, gay marriage. Dr. Clothier, what has been your response to this? What have you been hearing?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple different issues here. One is that a judge overturned the express will of a majority of the people in California, of all places, probably one of the most liberal states in the country. And so that, I think, feeds into the sense that some have, just society-wide, that the establishment and that the elite within our society just do not care what the people feel anymore. And this is just one more example of it. And so there's that part of the ruling that I think some people find offensive. Then there's a part where people feel that marriage is, by definition, between a man and a woman, and that the judge is basically trying to socially engineer from the bench without really support to do so. And one of the frustrations on the right that I've seen, which is interesting, because the lawyers who are arguing against Proposition 8 are probably two of the best lawyers in the country, full of respect for both David Boies and whatever the other guy's name is, it's escaping me.
Ted Olson. Actually, weren't they arguing for Prop 8?
No, they were arguing against it.
Wasn't... Okay, I guess I'm wrong. I'm sorry, my bad.
They were arguing against it. But the representatives arguing for Proposition 8 were weak, and the attorney general, basically, you get the impression that he just didn't like the law and so just really didn't try to defend it. And so then there's that element that's frustrating. We're not even getting, we haven't even gotten down to the content of the ruling yet, which some people feel like society's trying to be changed overnight without evidence that it's necessary to be changed. And then you have people who, on the conservative side, feel very strongly that the government shouldn't be in the marriage business at all, and that it's a religious institution. And I was very interested with something that Bill said, where he said that these gay people finally feel validated by the state. And I hear this quite often over and over. And I'm wondering why it feels so necessary to have the social sanction of the government for gay partnerships, and if marriage is the only acceptable way that that could happen. Because right now, I think by legislative means, that a majority of Americans would definitely support some sort of contractual relationships.
Like civil unions?
Yes, like civil unions, as long as it was not called marriage.
Bill, the romance involved in a contractual relationship just makes me glow. thanks, Dr. Clothier. Gosh, can I have one of those?
Well, Bill, that's what.
Well,
I mean,
I actually think for the benefit of society, Bill, that we need to get more back to what, because marriage is a contractual relationship when it is through the state. And when California made divorce no fault, that made the contract very easy to get out of for whatever reason. And being a business owner, I can tell you that entering a business contract holds more weight and force within the government. And so my question is how is it good necessarily, what inherent benefit do you see? Just what is magical about that marriage word?
Well, I think you might actually be at least a little surprised to find that while you said there were a lot of conservatives, there's a lot of LGBT people that also feel, and I would count myself as one of them. I think Josh and I talked about this on that first podcast, that thinks that marriage should actually just kind of be a religious institution and not the government shouldn't be involved whatsoever. You know, who I love isn't really the government's business. I don't think it's anyone's business other than me and my partner. So I would be perfectly fine. The problem comes in, however, that there are so many benefits to federal marriage that our society has become. I mean, think about it. Your health care is caught up in your spouse's health care and what their job is. You know, if you're married and the husband loses his job and suddenly the couple that are now out of health insurance, there's the monetary, you know, will she still get Social Security? All these things are now set up and are so dependent upon, as you said, the contract itself of marriage, that it's almost become now the only justification that you have to prove that your marriage is actually worthwhile enough for anyone to invest in it, including the government, which invests a hell of a lot of money into straight marriages. But the one thing I wanted to go back to, though, because I think, and I noticed that you said you didn't say that it was you that felt this way, but there were conservatives that felt that this judge was, you know, just kind of doing the activist judge liberal trying to social engineer. But I think it's important to point out that this was a conservative judge appointed by Ronald Reagan. And if you go back and look at the
actually,
history,
Bill, he was appointed by George Bush, but he was initially nominated by Ronald Reagan in 1987.
Exactly. He was nominated by Reagan. But, I mean, the House Democrats led the fight against him because they thought he was going to be anti-gay and anti-poor. And it took until George Bush the Elder there before he actually made it onto the court. So it's not like this is a guy that's known for being super uber liberal.
Sure. Hey, I don't want to cut you off right there. I don't mean to, Bill, but we're coming towards the end of this segment. We'll be right back right after these quick messages.
All right, you people on the left and right coasts, listen up. If you want to know what your fellow conservatives in the heartland of America, or as you call it, the flyover country, are thinking, go to your web browser and look at HoosierAccess.com. There you will find out what is on the mind of conservatives from the crossroads of America. HoosierAccess.com is the source for news, opinion, and commentary from conservative minds in the heartland. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today. You can also follow at Hoosier Access on Twitter and Hoosier Access on Facebook and subscribe to this show and podcast. Podcast forum on iTunes. That's HoosierAccess.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie. We've been having a pretty good conversation so far with Dr. Melissa Clothier of MelissaClothier.com and Liberty Pundits, and also with Bill Browning of the Bolerico Project. You can find him at Bolerico.com. Bill, you were I want to let you pick up here where you were at the end of your last statement talking about Judge Walker.
Well, Judge Walker, you know, and whether or not he was social engineering, and I think that's just a red herring, because I don't think that's exclusive to the right. I think any time that a decision comes down from a judge that, you know, liberals don't like, the number one thing to do is scream he was an activist judge. And that's just kind of become the new commonplace of blaming the judge for having some hidden agenda. And I really, you know, there have even been several. Pat Robertson was one of them. I remember, I think it was Glenn Beck as well, that started blaming, well, the judge is gay, so he should have recused himself. And that's just also such a slippery slope, because that's saying, you know, that women should never be able to rule on anything involving a woman or an African-American on any case that might be about, you know, black issues. So I think when it all comes down to it, it does basically come down to what the judge said. There's not really a reason to oppose it other than what we call the ick factor.
Well, here's a question that I have for both of you.
Of same-sex relationships, and that was about the only evidence they presented in court.
Well, here's a question that I want to present to both of you. I mean, what we had here in this ruling was an overturning again of the will of the people of California for the second time. This was the second ban on gay marriage that had passed in the state of California. Every state that has proposed a marriage amendment has passed. There hasn't been one that's failed. I mean, we're talking about from California to Maine, two of the most liberal states in the United States, and they've both passed.
That's not true, actually.
What do you mean?
Arizona failed once.
Well,
they had to bring it back the second time, and then it passed. But it actually went to a vote of the people, and it did not pass.
Okay. So we're talking about one loss, but then it did pass again. I mean, but the thing is that where gay marriage amendments have taken place, for the most part, they've passed. And the only time that we have seen things change have been when we've seen judges. It happened in Massachusetts. It happened in Iowa. And I mean, at what point do the will of the people actually come into play here?
Well, I think that depends on how you look at it, Josh, because if you're looking at California's history, it's also important to realize that their state legislature and their state Senate passed same-sex marriage three times, and that it was Governor Schwarzenegger who refused to sign it all three times. They just didn't have enough to override the veto.
The difference there, Bill, is that we're talking about a legislature as opposed to the actual voters. I mean, this was put to a person-to-person vote. We're not talking about a legislative vote.
Right. But I mean, let's stop and think, especially coming from the conservative, you know, legislative viewpoint here, that our whole constitution is based around the idea of representative democracy. We're supposed to be electing those officials to go and do our bidding. And if those officials are saying that they think it's okay, and we just don't like what they're saying, to throw everything to a vote of the people, will, I mean, we're both here from Indiana, so we know how hard it is to amend our constitution. We've watched them try to do the amendment here. But if you look at California, they throw everything on the ballot there up to the will of the people. And I mean, they're absolutely bankrupt. They're corrupt as hell. And they've got all sorts of problems going on. So is that necessarily the solution to all of our problems, is to just throw everything to the will of the people and bypass the legislative process or the judges, who are the check and balance on what the people actually do and what the legislative branch does?
What do you think, Dr. Clothier?
Well, I think that Bill would have more of a point if there wasn't such a disconnect between our legislators and our leadership and the establishment and the people. of course, we're a representative democracy. That's what we are. And in California, the legislature, as he rightly notes, wanted to pass that. But I would submit, based on Proposition 8's passage, that they aren't representing their voters necessarily very, very accurately. Now, and that's in California. And again, California is like one of the most liberal states. This is, and it's kind of a bellwether. I'd like to get back, though, to what the judge actually said in his ruling and what it means and why some people, I'm looking at Gay Patriot right now. He's a friend of mine, Bruce, there, who's a writer. And, of course, on the face of the ruling, he was happy for the outcome of the ruling. However, this is what he said. The judge goes on to say that the, quote, right to marry is fundamental, but has he actually read the text of Prop 8? It doesn't address the right to marry, but what marriages the state recognizes. He goes on to write that marriage has retained certain characteristics throughout the history of the U.S. Wonder if he'll address sexual difference and sexual exclusivity, da-da-da-da. And then he talks about just how sloppy the ruling is. The evidence shows that the movement from marriage away from a gendered institution and toward an institution free from state-mandated gender roles reflects an understanding of gender rather than a change of marriage. Say what? State-mandated gender roles? You mean the discredited notion of the social construction of marriage? So, and then he talks about how there's any failure to cite many of the serious studies on sex difference and whatever. And then he talks about the guy is given more to popular jargon than to constitutional interpretation. Quote, the evidence shows that Proposition 8 harms the state's interest in equality because it mandates that men and women be treated differently based on antiquated and discredited notions of gender. Antiquated and discredited notions of gender, this is Gay Patriot speaking, discredited by whom? Sociologists writing in the 1970s, inventing a social construct out of thin air. And I think what Bruce is getting at in his writing is what a lot of people feel, that this is, that we're starting to cite pop psychology and here we go. And here's the thing, Bill, and for people listening, I don't want to be talking about this subject, by the way. And I think it's a fairly American thing that nobody really wants to be in the business of what's going on in somebody's bedroom. Nobody wants to be talking. Everybody's got family members who are gay. You know what I mean? It's just like nobody wants to be having this discussion. But they also feel that that marriage is by definition between a man and a woman. That's the way it's always been. And I think it's incumbent on the gay activists and those going for gay marriage to explain and convince people why this is good for society and why this is a building block for society and convince people of this argument. Otherwise, if this goes through the judicial process and gets passed against the will of the people, I think we're going to have a situation like abortion where the country is divided when this doesn't need to be a divisive issue.
Here's a question I want to pose to both of you real quick. Because of this ruling, and presumably it will go all the way to the Supreme Court, Do we see Congress taking action, possibly in a few years, because it looks like we'll be seeing quite possibly a turnover from a Republican Congress, from a Democrat Congress to a Republican Congress, at least in the House. But do we see any time soon on the congressional level a movement to actually go towards a federal marriage amendment again because of this?
Well, I'll take first bat at that one. Of course, there's going to be several right-wingers. I mean, Michelle Bachmann, for example, that will rise up in horrible turgid anger and demand that there's some sort of constitutional amendment. You know, maybe, I'm not really that worried about it. I mean, maybe this is just the changing views that you can obviously see, but there's not that many states that I think are suddenly going to be interested in dredging up something that's, it's like Dr. Clothier who mentioned it as abortion. And I don't think there's that many people that want to spend the next 40 years in some sort of culture war over same-sex marriage, especially when we've all got somebody in the family that we know. And I mean, I don't think people have the heart for that. So I think getting it through all of the states and everything else would be such a difficult prospect. And if you've already got the Supreme Court ruling that a state-level constitutional amendment isn't going to fly, I don't think there's much chance of it surviving if it made it through that entire long process. It's just too long of a process for it.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Clothier, what do you think?
I agree. I agree with him generally that that's not going to happen. I don't see it happening. But unless this gets passed at the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court makes a ruling basically saying that marriage is a constitutional right, I think that there's going to be a challenge for that. And I think it's going to cause another societal split unnecessarily. It just seems a really bad way to go about all this, because I think that the gay rights folks are progressing along with their objectives. And so I think that this would, I know this sounds crazy, but be counterproductive to their desired ends.
I think there's something to what you say there, Dr. Clothier. There's quite a few people in the LGBT community that would argue the same argument that you are, that this could actually backfire. And I think that there's several folks, like, you know, the National Organization for Marriage tour that traipsed through town last week. And, you know, their supporter shows up with a sign that says the solution to gay marriage or same-sex marriage. And it shows a picture of two nooses.
That's awful.
That crap, though. I mean, I don't think America has the stomach for it. And I think it's going to end up, I think, at least personally, almost like interracial marriage, because there was no constitutional amendment, big drumbeat after that, because nobody wants to look like the bigot that says, oh, they've got this, we should take it away. You know what I mean? Once it's passed, I think Americans tend to say, well, they've already got it. Abortion has been just about the only one that people have still continuously fought against. And that's just such a different topic altogether that I think it'll end up more like, you know, African Americans and I don't know, maybe more like interracial marriage.
I think that you're wrong, actually, because this decision is not the same. It's not the same as discriminating against somebody of skin color, which is, you know, objectively abhorrent and shameful when people think about it. When it comes to gay marriage between a man and a woman has been a traditional part of society for, and I understand you can go through the arguments, and somebody on Twitter did and said, well, at one time it was illegal for, you know, the certain people of certain status to marry of lower status, blah, blah. Okay, I understand that, or blacks to marry whites, and this is different. This is fundamentally changing what it means to define a marriage between a man and a woman that has been, and a lot of people don't like monkeying with what is they perceive as kind of a building block of society, Christian or not, you know, just a building block of society. And then they sit there and they go, okay, this is what marriage is. And so I'm hoping that the move will be to create civil unions or something to that effect and keep marriages in. Because I think where it comes to an issue constitutionally is when we're talking about the First Amendment and freedom to have of, you know, religion, where people are sitting there going, wait a minute, my right to exercise my religion is being, or how I view religion is being superseded by now the state demanding that this be what marriage is. And so the thing is, if this goes to the Supreme Court and says that the marriage can be, I don't see, is it going to be discriminating? I think it's going to be a constitutional issue between the, with the First Amendment.
Well, guys, I hate to, I'm sorry to, we've actually,
really quick,
Bill,
one thing I, is that Dr. Clothier said,
Bill, guys, can you hear me? Can you hear me? We've actually come to the end of the segment. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
No, this and it was really getting good. I want to have both of you on again, because clearly, you know, this will be a topic of discussion for at least the next several months, because it's a foregone conclusion that this will go to the Supreme Court. But I thank both of you for being on. Again, we've had Bill Browning from the Balearico Project. You can find him at Balearico.com, and his Twitter account is at Twitter.com/Balearico. And you can find Dr. Melissa Clothier at MelissaClothier.com and Liberty Pundits, as well as Twitter.com/MelissaTweets. Thank you both for being on, and I hope we can have you on again soon. All right. Welcome back to Gillespie. Wasn't that – that was an intense conversation we just had with Melissa and Bill. And we hope to we had to cut them off, and Bill was about to get into a really good point. But, you know, that just means we have to have them on again. And this
– We
this,
almost went Fox News on that.
We almost did. We almost had to. But, you know, we'll have them on again. Clearly, this issue will be going all the way up to the Supreme Court. But, you know – we'll just need to continue discussing this. This is clearly a topic here on Gillespie that we have no problem talking about. You know, we're free and open to discuss controversial subjects like that. And that's what you expect from, you know, people on FTR.
But when it's such a complex subject, you know, it can't be treated in a simple 1 hour show.
No, it can't. I mean, we could have given them the entire hour. I could have just said, welcome to Gillespie and shut up. and you know it,
but we wouldn't have had that wonderful monologue from you, and then
thank you.
Leading into
you
tonight,
can't do that, Josh.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, we need, you know, this leads into our weekly segment. This clearly is not as award winning as Face Punch Wednesday on the Snark Factor with Fingers Malloy, but dang it, we want to be close, and hopefully we will sneak one of Fingers' awards away from him at some point. I think we may just actually steal it instead of being awarded it, but it'll be on the Gillespie shelf eventually. But the weekly Tuesday Evening Stupid, and this week is especially special because actually it was covered last week on the Face Punch Wednesday with Fingers Malloy. But, you know, it is so dumb. It is so painfully stupid that it needs to be brought
and
up
again. And if Gillespie was on the air when he earned his first stupid...
That's right.
Now he's done another stupid.
That's right.
I mean, he's about to join Alan Grayson and Tony Weiner as perennial candidates for the stupid.
That's Anthony Weiner. I don't think he goes by Tony.
Whatever.
Anyway, so if you haven't heard it yet, and frankly, if you haven't, where have you been? That's what I want to know. But we're going to do a little a mix with this. We're going to give you a little bit of montage of Pete Stark. So take a listen to Pete Stark's greatest hits, if you will.
You don't think that what the national debt is important?
The national debt measures the wealth.
The national debt, don't we have to...
The wealthier we are.
The larger the
national
debt,
the wealthier it's an indication
we are
of the wealth of the country. You're right.
So the more you owe, the more you're worth?
In federal account, in national scheme of things, that's quite right.
But you're going to spend it to blow up innocent people if we can get enough kids to grow old enough for you to send to Iraq to get their heads blown off for the president's amusement.
I think that there are very few constitutional limits that would prevent the federal government from rules that could affect your private life. Now, the basis for that would be, how does it affect other people?
Is your question, they can do any, is your answer that they can do anything?
The federal government, yes, can do most anything in this country.
Mr. Coxman, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Thank you. I wouldn't dignify you if I peed on your leg. It wouldn't be worth wasting the urine. But
he wouldn't waste the urine. Wow.
Not only would he not waste the urine, but he also believes that government is... limitless?
Well, that's how they're acting. I think he's not the only one who thinks that.
Well, it goes back to what I said again in the monologue.
Barack Hussein Obama thinks government is limitless.
The government, we are the ones you've been waiting for. And
help us, Barack Obama.
Well, in this case, help us, Pete Stark. Whose real name is Fortney, by the way.
Fortney.
So Fortney Stark, a.k.a. Pete, believes that, you know, he would not waste urine to help save an individual. who happen to be on fire. And also believes that the government...
I don't think that'd be the best way to treat it anyway.
Well, you know, you're right. I would prefer water.
Or you roll them in a blanket.
Yeah, but even basically, he's seemingly saying that he doesn't care about that. That was a member, I believe, of the... what's the Border Patrol down there on the border?
Oh, the Minuteman?
Yeah, that was a Minuteman who asked that question. And here we have a person who I believe was part of a Tea Party there in Congressman Stark's district. But it's funny. If you look at this particular, the video where we caught the audio, I like how they put it here. Pete Stark, congressman and constitutional scholar extraordinaire, does not think that there is any limit to what the federal government can demand from its citizens. Is it any wonder perhaps he cheated off of a fellow Democrat and moron, Phil Hare, in the government 101 course in college?
Well, I think when he gets voted out of office, there's going to be a place for him at Harvard that...
Well, the thing is, I don't know what his district is like in California, but I can only imagine it's just very far left as the rest of California.
Well, Frank, if you follow Barragond, who I know is probably listening in right now and participating in the chat, because he's a faithful listener to Gillespie. Thank you, Barragond. Shout out for you. He lived in California when Pete Stark, I don't know if even when it was first elected, but I mean, that was, we're talking back in the early 90s, maybe late 80s. I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said that when he lived in California years ago, Pete Stark was the congressman then. If actually, I can find out real quick when Pete Stark was first elected. But the thing is that he has to be in a district. He has served since 1973. Clearly, this is a district for him.
Oh, we're talking a John Murtha kind of gerrymandering. He'll probably horizontally be retired.
He will. He represents California's 13th congressional district in southwestern Alameda County. Currently, he is the sixth most.
Oh, Bay Area.
Yeah, the Alameda, the 13th district includes Alameda, Union City, Hayward, Newark, San Leandro, and Fremont, which is apparently a potential landing place for the Oakland A's, as well as part of Oakland. Conveniently, and Pleasanton.
Oh, so he's on the other side of the bay from San Fran.
Yes. Yeah. So this safe. He's a safe guy.
So he can make stupid remarks like this and get away with it.
Absolutely. The only way that he could be taken out is probably in a primary.
Well, obviously the California Democrats wouldn't stand for that.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, they'll eat up their own, but not in a primary. Republicans like to eat their own in the primary.
Yes, as we know here in Indiana.
We've had plenty of interesting primaries here the last couple cycles where Republicans, they just show no mercy on each other. And it's a blood sport here in Indiana, a Republican primary.
Which you wouldn't think here in flyover country it would be a blood sport,
no.
But it certainly is.
It's crazy. Talk about, there's another example we could talk about, stupid. But we won't go there right now. We're focusing on Pete Stark, who is... by far the dumbest person, the most painful stupid that you could probably come across in terms of a government official of the week.
I thought Alan Grayson had some really stupid stuff.
Well, here's the thing is that, I thought that the month of August, it'd be difficult to come up with some stupid because the month of August is we reached the congressional recess. The House is going to be out for 5 weeks, except...
coming back?
I believe today they came back.
Just to vote on one bill?
They're going to try to. There's rumor that they could be trying to pull in a border security bill. I don't know if that happened today or not, but I know that they're coming back to cover pensions or something for something or another. They're trying to save their own jobs is what they're doing. Anyway, well, Pete Stark, congratulations! You are this week's Tuesday Evening Stupid. And as we come to another award-winning award-winning episode of Gillespie.
What award it is, I don't know, but it is award-winning.
It wins...
Peace Prize.
That's right. I think we should be up for a Nobel Peace Prize. Because, we brought people together tonight to talk about...
two extremely diametrically opposing viewpoints on LGBT issues.
Yeah, and, there wasn't any blood, so I'd call that a win. Anyway, well,
we weren't trying hard enough.
that's probably true. Anyway, like I said at the beginning, we were leading off. Well, we've batted lead off, and we've got on base. It's time for Aaron Proctor to advance the runners. And Duke Over America will be following the Aaron Proctor Show, the Smart Girl Report with Jenny Erickson, and the Armchair Energist getting ready to hit, well, to drive all of us home tonight to close the evening. Thank you for listening to Gillespie on FTRRadio.com, and tune in again next week at 7 p.m. Talk to you later.